us on.
Yeah, thanks, Natalie. How you doing? Did you have a good bank holiday weekend and a good bank holiday Monday? Did you? Are you in good form? Well, this is the Richie Allen Show. It's another glorious afternoon here in South Manchester. It is May 7th, 2019.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, I'll be joined in the second hour of the program by an old friend of mine, Ben Gilroy, the activist and the scourge of the banks in Ireland. Does a lot of tremendously important work for people being wrongfully evicted from their homes in Ireland. Got to know Ben in my London days a few years ago. His supporters, of which there are many, will know that he was recently incarcerated in Mountjoy Jail in Dublin for contempt of court. Disgraceful. We'll get into that and much more with Ben Gilroy in the second hour of the programme. And before that, I welcome back another old friend of mine, Michael Shrimpton, the former barrister and author, will join the show. We'll go through one or two of the biggest stories of the last few days. We'll talk about Brexit and about the European parliamentary elections, and we might even have a chat about the never-ending saga that is the search for Madeleine McCann. We might get into some of that as well. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. It is live on Fab Radio 2, my website, Trigger Warning, TuneIn Radio, and lots of other places as well that I don't even know about. Lovely! Yeah, it's been a good few days. Been nice. Be nice. Hope you've had a good one, as I said. It was busy for us. We're moving house next week. I'll tell you the full story on Thursday. I think you might find it somewhat interesting. In the meantime, Royal Baby Fever. Have you got some Royal Baby Fever? Have you? You have? I can't get enough of it. Royal Baby Fever. What's the baby going to be called? Media frenzy today. And my friend, Kay Burley, and your friend, she's your friend too. Kay Burley loves it. Here's Kay with Ingrid Seward. Ingrid Seward of Majesty Magazine. They're having a right old time of it here.
I've thought maybe Charles, after his grandfather, Prince Charles, and his uncle, Charles Spencer. I don't think for a moment it'll be Spencer. I think that would be very, very strange. I think maybe you thought... you thought Alexander Charles, didn't you?
I thought Alexander Philip Charles is what I thought.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe Charles Alexander Philip, which would be Cap. Cap for short. Now, that's a nice, trendy little name.
It's good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Lovely to talk to you, Kay. Thank
lovely.
You.
Variation on a theme. What do you think? Let us know your thoughts.
What do you think?
The new Royal Babby should be called. He is Baby Sussex at the moment. We'll see him tomorrow for the very first time as he's introduced to the world. What might his names be? And will he have a title? Ingrid thinks not. What do you think? I think almost certainly he will.
Yeah. As for names, Mammon and Moloch have come up quite a few times today on social media. I don't know. Kay knows, though, that the baby is another little bloodsucker that will do feck all for his entire life and bleed the public dry.
Our royal correspondent, Rhiannon Mills, is in Windsor for us. When are we going to see this little mite?
This little mite. Good stuff, Kay. This little parasite. Moving on. I've talked a lot over the last few years about what's happened to daytime television news. What has happened is it's just become one 24-hour breakfast show. That's what it is, with crap like that dressed up as news. Anyway, European Union elections. Tommy the Tit Robinson was in Blackpool. 100 people turned up, apparently, on Tommy the Tit. Watch. You won't even know he's in your town. He's not as famous, apparently, as he thinks he is. The mainstream media getting great value out of mocking these appearances that don't draw too many people to them. And Robinson's supporters getting great mileage out of saying that the media is telling lies. There were there weren't thousands there. 100 goons turned up to hear him speak. And that's pretty embarrassing. Anyway, on to more important European Union matters. Robinson, the interest to me is, and it's not really that interesting to me, Yaxley Lennon is standing in the North West. He wants to become an MEP for the North West, does Stephen Yaxley Lennon. That'll be the name, I reckon, on the ballot paper, won't it? Is that right? Is that, if that's his legal name, I don't know. Anyway, you probably heard Natalie Powell at the top of the hour saying to you and to me that the UK will have to fight European elections. We knew this. We knew this, but they've rubber stamped it today. We will be fighting these European elections on May 23rd, but Theresa May said the UK would not have to take part if MPs agreed a Brexit deal first. Now, David Lidington regretted saying, he said it's not going to be possible to finish that process. Basically, May's not going to have any time to get her deal through Parliament. So her de facto number two, David Lidington, has said the government would try to make the delay as short as possible, but we are definitely having these EU elections.
Given how little time there is that it's regrettably not going to be possible to finish that process before the date that's legally due for the European parliamentary elections. We very much hoped that we'd be able to get our exit sorted, have the treaty of withdrawal concluded, so that those elections did not have to take place. But legally, they do have to take place unless our withdrawal has been given legal effect. So those will now go ahead, but we will be redoubling our efforts and talks with MPs of all parties to try to make sure that the delay after that is as short as possible.
The blue fairy is standing just behind him even. Tut, now, tut, tut, tut. Now, David, every time you tell a lie, a little boy dies or a little fairy dies somewhere. Massive lies. This was the plan all along. This is not just an unintended consequence of being unable to get a deal through Parliament. It was the plan from day one to have these elections, which will take place on May 23rd. Where's the anger? Where is the anger amongst the populace? There doesn't seem to be any. Does there, you know, was there ever a time when people would have gathered en masse and marched in their millions to Westminster, to Downing Street, and basically turfed that filthy, corrupt cesspit out on its ear? Was there ever a time when people would have said, what's going on? I can't believe this. 3 years ago, we voted to leave. Massively. The biggest turnout for any election or any referendum in the country's history. 52% said, let's get out. And you're telling us 3 years later, we're having European Union parliamentary elections? You've got to be kidding me. But no, they're not kidding you. It's what they're doing. Staying on Brexit, the Brexit party leader Nigel Farage has been accused of anti-Semitic tropes or troping. Can you say troping? Do you see this today? Wrote about it today. Go to richieallen.co.uk. Apparently, well, we know Nigel Farage has been on InfoWars with Alex Jones a few times. We know this. And apparently, while appearing with Alex Jones, Farage used words like globalist and New World Order. And the UK press is saying those are code words for Jews ruling the world, which is monumental bollocks, of course. They're not codes for Jew hatred or Jew blaming or Jews ruling the world. They're not. Most people heard of the New World Order through George H.W. Bush. He wasn't the person who coined the phrase, but most people associated with him in terms of geopolitical figures. He's the man. He talked about it before the Gulf War. He was speaking about the agenda for global governance. He was speaking about a one world government with Washington pulling the strings. That's how he saw it. A new order for the world, and as has been discussed many times on this programme, to justify that new world order, they used the imminent, ever-present, omnipresent spectre of global terrorism. We're only a few minutes away from a terrorist attack. So they used this threat of global terrorism for alignment, not just on military policy, but on fiscal policy, on everything. Alignment, a new world order, where countries couldn't act in their own interests, where countries had to act for the greater good, not just for themselves. And that's what the term New World Order means. It's where sovereignty is diluted, where you can't even imagine what it was like. You know, you used to have a sovereign country, governments used to work for the people. Now, this never happened, of course, but at least it looked like that for a long time. you voted in a government and the government worked on the interests or in the interest of its people. Of course, bollocks, I know that. What we've seen in the last 30 years is the erasing of that illusion. It's out in the open now. More and more centralised control. That's what George H.W. Bush was talking about. And Richard Haass of the Council on Foreign Relations gave a big speech last year that I got a great lot of mileage out of by playing it on the programme, where he talked about borders don't mean anything anymore. You know, if a country's doing something that might be polluting the air, well, that's going to affect a country three countries down. So the country three countries down has got a right to act. That's what it's about. There's nothing anti-Semitic about it at all. Farage was talking about how political systems work with financial systems to engineer a worldwide government when he was on with Alex Jones, and he's right. Now, I don't know how much of that Farage believes or how much of it he really knows. But I wrote about this today, and I'm not going to dwell on it because I want to move on. But a lot of this has to do with Israel. I have no doubt about that. Israel and the European Union are bosom buddies. And the European Union ambassador to Israel is a guy called Emmanuel Geoffre. And Emmanuel Geoffre wrote in the Jerusalem Post only 4 weeks ago that cooperation on security issues, anti-terrorism and anti-Semitism is growing. Right? Israel and the EU are getting closer and closer. We feel there is more still to offer. A key example is the development of gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean. Israel loves the European Union. Loves it. And Israel is totally against Brexit. And it wants to see an eventual federal EU superstate. Why? Because it's easier for Israel to manage international policy towards Israel. Much easier. Centralised bodies. Easier for Israel to influence that. Rather than lobby 400 countries. Well, if we had a few political unions and we only had to manage three of them. Much easier for us to go around murdering pregnant women, which is a national sport in Israel, and the Israeli Defence Forces, right? So I think it's got a lot to do with that. I don't think that Zionists in Israel have a lot against Nigel Farage. And we know that on InfoWars, Alex Jones has never taken on the Israeli lobby, because Alex is not stupid, right? People call him a Zionist shill. No, it's not as simple as that. It's not as black and white as that. He knew it was better for him, growing his channel, to not get involved with that and maybe to cover other stuff, right? That's what it is. And I don't think Farage is seen as any sort of enemy in Israel. I know that sounds like a contradiction in light of what I said about the European Union, Israel favouring the European Union. Yes, but I don't think they've got any real truck with Farage per se. I think it's just handy at the moment because the Brexit Party has hit the ground running and is doing very well. 16 minutes past the hour. A lot of tweets on that. We'll get into the tweets a bit later. Now, Carl Benjamin, who's standing for MEP for Southern England and Gibraltar. This guy is better known as Sargon of Akkad. Is that right? Or Akkad. Sargon of Akkad. I'm not joking when I say that. I've never been into YouTube celebrities. I don't watch the videos. I couldn't give a damn. No disrespect to any of these people. I'm not interested. Too busy. So I know very little about this guy. The first I came across him was this rape thing with Jess Phillips. So, the police are allegedly looking into these remarks made by Carl Benjamin. Right? Because Jess Phillips has accused him of malicious communications. She's gotten the police involved. She's a Labour MP for Yardley, Birmingham Yardley. Benjamin is standing in the European elections and he once tweeted that he wouldn't even rape Jess Phillips. He refused to apologise for the remark, saying that any subject can be the subject of a joke. She was on the Victoria Derbyshire programme, which airs on BBC television, BBC Two, in the AM, 10 AM I think, and she told the programme that she cried in the street after hearing a video by him. She said until that point, she'd been putting a brave face on things and pretending it was all fine. Do you want to hear some of this? Because I think it's very interesting. I have no issues with either Phillips or Carl Benjamin. I don't know any of these people. I don't pay very much attention to what they say. But here's Jess Phillips speaking with Victoria Derbyshire today.
I know you haven't watched it yourself and it's now been taken down from YouTube. He said, there's been an awful lot of talk about whether I would or wouldn't rape Jess Phillips. I suppose with enough pressure, I might cave. But let's be honest, nobody's got that much beer. When you hear that, what do you feel? What do you think?
I think that when the comments were sent to me, they were transcribed and sent to me by a journalist. I think my initial feeling was just, this is just the same man doing the same thing. He's only got one shtick, you know, that he's dines out on having a go at me. That's all he's got.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? That's brilliant by Jess Phillips there. If she just stopped there, that would be a terrific answer. Who is this idiot who dines out on saying things about me and gets these laughs by making stupid jokes? I don't care, she said. So why didn't she leave it there? But then...
And then for, I was actually in the bank and the person I was talking to in the bank said to me, are you all right? Because I was having to respond on text message. And I looked up and I said, yeah, you know, I'm absolutely fine. And I realised that I did what all women do in these situations, is that I'd been putting a brave face on it and pretending that it was all fine and that I could cope. And it sort of dawned on me that for 4 years, essentially, this man has made a career out of harassing me. And I felt harassed. I felt like, how can somebody say that they would rape me if forced and be a legitimate candidate in an election? It was one thing when he was just some idiot off the internet with a load of bros following him. It's a different thing when he's standing on the same platforms that I'm standing on, that he will potentially go to a parliament himself as an elected representative, when he said these things. And I just cannot believe our system is so weak at the moment that that's allowed to happen.
Help me out here. Did she say that she was fine with it? Then in the bank she felt harassed because it's not some guy with his mates anymore. He's now a politician. Why didn't Victoria Derbyshire jump in there? This is what she said.
It was one thing when he was just some idiot off the internet with a load of bros following him. It's a different thing when he's standing on the same platforms that I'm standing on, that he will potentially go to a parliament himself as an elected representative.
No problem when he's just a bloke with his mates tweeting me. But there is a problem when he might be some elected representative. It gets worse.
I mean, I cried actually in the street in Birmingham City Centre. Just because I felt like the enormous weight of years and years and years of abuse. And I felt... It's not that I'm frightened for the credible threat to me, actually. I'm not frightened that anyone's going to hurt me. I can't.
So you don't fear for your physical safety?
I can't live my life fearing for my physical safety, otherwise I would do nothing. And I really like living my life like a normal person. So I don't let that creep in very often. What I do fear for is my mental health, actually. And this is essentially like coercive control.
This is very revealing. She doesn't it doesn't bother her, and she knows that it isn't a credible threat of rape. It's very revealing, this. I often wish I'd have chosen law at uni instead of television and radio and journalism, because I'd have tied her up in knots if I was the presenter. It's like she's in a rage, like a smacked, sulky child, that this guy, Benjamin, is saying stuff and she can't get him shut down. No matter what she does, it's killing her. Right? It's all right if he's a guy with his mates, but now it's not all right. He's a politician and people are listening to him. Or some people are listening to him anyway. And I'm absolutely raging because I can't get this guy shut down. I demand that he's deplatformed, but it's not happening. It's killing her. You know, she's conceded that doesn't hurt her, that it isn't credible, that it's a bad joke. What about the joke? Victoria Derbyshire asks her about the joke and the context.
We contacted Carl Benjamin for a comment. He didn't get back to us. Previously, he has said, quote, any subject can be the subject of a joke. What do you say to him directly?
There's this whole thing about how context is king and, oh, I was only joking, that is being used to cover, like I say, what I believe to be the rise of acceptable fascism in our society. And I don't believe that anything can be the subject of a joke. For a start off, what Carl Benjamin says isn't even funny. You know, I like a gag. I am all for using humour, especially in political discourse, because I think it reaches out to people. What he's saying is not funny. And also, if your gag has to have a victim attached to it, an actual victim, then your craft of making jokes is very, very poor. If you're laughing at someone rather than with them, then you've gone completely wrong.
Again, incredibly revealing here. Tasteless jokes. Why is there no room for tasteless jokes? I remember speaking to the ex-Manchester United player Paul McGrath, and he was in a bar that was run by my oft-mentioned partner, Caroline. It was Caroline's bar, her own business in Spain. And he came in with his son, Chris McGrath, a lovely lad. And Paul McGrath was very nice. And it was when, it was early on into his sobriety. And he was in great form. And we were having a chat later on when it was all shutting down and when things were getting quieter later on. And I remember saying to him, is that story about the Manchester comedian Bernard Manning true? Did Bernard Manning ask you to stand up when you were hoodwinked into going to his club when you were a Manchester United player? And did he make jokes about the fact that you were black and Irish? A plague that he wouldn't wish on anybody, right? Did he? And Paul McGrath said yes. And I said, were you offended by that? And he said, no, it was very funny. It was very funny. He said, I just found it hilarious. And Manning was good. And afterwards we met him and we had a chat and all that. Now, I always think of that when people talk about tasteless jokes, not funny. I don't think it's funny joking about rape, and I'm no virtue signaler, you know that. But someone else might think it's funny, right? And victim, she said, there's always a victim. Is she kidding Jess Phillips to suggest that she's some sort of victim because Benjamin made some joke about her appearance? Because the quip, I wouldn't even rape her, is a pretty lowbrow way of saying that you think somebody is ugly. So what, you know? Get over it. Get over yourself. But where this all leads, of course, it leads down a very dangerous road. And I'm not going to get into that because I'm going to play some music and get my first guest on. That was Jess Phillips on Victoria Derbyshire this morning. The entire interview is available through the BBC iPlayer. Just look for Victoria Derbyshire there and you can watch all of it. And note that I haven't taken anything out of context because I never would. Jess Phillips didn't bother me when the chap was just with his mates, you know. But now that he's an MEP candidate, I had to cry. This is the Eagles on the Richie Allen Show. Back in two. You are listening to your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live from South Manchester. Thanks for joining the programme. Thanks for all the tweets. Brilliant to be with you. It is May 7th, 2019. And the time is fast approaching 29 minutes past the hour. By the way, I did write a little piece today on the website as well. I went mad today. I went mad. It's like a bus. You wait for one forever and then two come along together. I put a little piece up about mandatory vaccination, which Matt Hancock, the UK's health secretary, has been talking about of late. And World Health Organization figures on measles. So I wrote a little piece. It's a personal piece, really. I talked a bit about a recent visit to the GP by the aforementioned Caroline. It's not the best written thing you'll ever read in your life, but it's coherent enough, and I think it kind of talks a bit about what going to the doctor used to be like when doctors were, I don't know, better qualified, when they had more time, as opposed to now. Right, right. Let's welcome our first guest. I've never done this before. I've never brought him on for a general chat about one or two news stories. I want to talk Brexit with him, of course, and I also want to ask him about the funding for the search for Madeleine McCann. We'll get into that as well. He's a former barrister, of course, very, very well known for his brushes with the law, which we've gotten into this programme many times. Very unfairly treated, I believe, and I've said this many times. He's a former immigration judge, former politician, and you know him as Michael Shrimpton. Let's welcome him back to the programme. Michael, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. My pleasure. Pleasure to be back on the programme.
Thanks. It's been quite a long time. We're entering cricket season. I might not get you in a couple of weeks' time.
You might not. No, I'm looking forward to the World Cup. I have a ticket for the final.
Have you? Good for you. How did you finagle a ticket for the final?
Well, I entered my name in the ballot of MCC members, and I've got a ticket for the final, so there we are.
I think you know somebody. I think it's cronyism, Shrimpton. I think it's classic cronyism.
No. It was a fairly conducted ballot.
Well, I'm a conspiracy theorist. Great to have you back in the programme. David Lidington told us today what we knew already. We're going to have European parliamentary elections on May 23rd. I think this is the greatest stitch-up of all time. My opinion is worthless. My listeners are tired of me. What do you think of what's happened since the vote to leave on June 23rd, can you believe it, 2016? And did you foresee it?
Well, I think it was always going to be a battle because the Cabinet Office...
Well, that was quick. Michael Shrimpton, you dropped out, Michael. Sorry about that. You dropped out momentarily there. My apologies. I can hear you perfect now. Just as you were going to answer that question, did you foresee it coming? So go ahead. Hopefully you won't have any more problems. Go ahead.
Well, I think I did. I didn't foresee the exactly what has happened. Who could? But it was clear the Cabinet Secretary and the Cabinet Office were opposed to withdrawal from the EU. I knew about GO2, of course, the German operation in London. I knew that Joe Cox had been assassinated by GO2 in order to try and swing the referendum the Remainers' way. And I was expecting dirty tricks. And I'm not totally shocked by what's happened, although it is absolutely extraordinary the extent to which the Remainers are willing to jeopardise our parliamentary democracy by refusing to abide by the result.
And I'm going to go back to the Joe Cox thing. You and I had this out before. You and I are old sparring partners, although I'm humble in the face of a great legal mind who's a great arguer. I'm humble. I'm not placing myself on the same level as you. But you've had this Joe Cox thing in German intelligence. Now, my listeners love listening to you. They find you fascinating. Obviously articulate, incredibly bright. They say Shrimpton blames the Germans for everything. Now, hang on a second. Where's the evidence that, number one, Joe Cox, the former MP, was indeed assassinated? And number two, if there is any evidence, and I want to hear it, by the way, and number two, why would the German intelligence agents be involved in it?
Well, I think it's easier to answer number two first. The European Union is a development of the European Economic Community. In German, that stands for Europäisch, or it translates as Europäisch Wirtschaftsgemeinschaft. And that goes back to the Funk plan and the work which was done in the Reich Ministry of Economic Affairs between 1939 and 1941 as to how Germany was going to rule post-war Europe. So the European Economic Community, aka the European Union, was always a German plan. And German intelligence has been associated with it from the very beginning. And we're going back to the 1940s. The Germans always intended that the UK would be ensnared in the EEC. We had the dirty work at the crossroads to remove Anthony Eden as prime minister. We know German intelligence was involved in that. We know that Anthony Eden was compromised at Suez because the first Sea Lord, Admiral Mountbatten, I think then was C&C Mediterranean, who was involved in the naval side of the operations of Suez, was a German spy, as was his father, Prince Louis of Battenberg. And we know the Germans arranged for the assassination of Hugh Gaitskell, the leader of the Labour Party, because of his opposition to EEC entry. We had to blackmail. We know the Germans are blackmailing General de Gaulle. We had to arrange to counter the blackmail by applying our own pressure to de Gaulle and asking him to veto the first and second UK applications. We know that Mountbatten tried to stage a military coup in 1968, but was stopped at the last minute. And we know that Mountbatten tried to blackmail Her Majesty the Queen in 1972 not over anything the Queen had done. The Queen's behaviour has always been immaculate, as you'd expect.
Don't get me started on that. You throw this in every time. Don't get me started on the royal family. You have to throw one in there. And it just wastes time. These people are vile, in my opinion. Let's not get into that.
The royal family are lovely. But
they're
Prince
vile.
Margaret,
they're Germans as well, by the way. They're Germans, and they're descendants of Germans. So when you say the Germans...
Well, they're not. No, the royal family is only German by marriage. People who understand this, the royal family is British, but it because Sophia married the Elector of Hanover, and she was Charles II's daughter, wasn't she? Because she married the Elector of Hanover, and because her son became king.
Michael, hang on just 1 second. Let me jump in. My lord, please allow me. They changed their names from Saxe-Coburg to Windsor. And we know this because, as far as I remember, and I'm supposed to be a history graduate, this was all to do with resentment towards Germany after the First World War. They are directly descendant of Germans. And by Germans, because Hitler lost the war, and I believe that you're bang on the money here, by the way, I believe the petrochemical and financial elites of the world were using the Nazis to dominate Europe so that they could control post-World War II Europe and control Hitler as a puppet. That's what I believe. So when you say the Germans after the Second World War, you mean the financial elites and the global corporate elites that controlled Germany at that time?
Well, I mean the Deutsche Verteidigungsdienst, German intelligence. German intelligence controls the banks because it controls offshore high-yield trading. And all major banks indulge in offshore high-yield trading. It's controlled from Frankfurt. So banks ultimately are vulnerable to German pressure, which is how the Germans were able to set up the 2008 financial crash. It was child's play for them. It's a standard German tactic. They set up the Great Depression in 1929 and set up the depression of the early 1890s. Standard German tactic to destabilize Western economies through organizing a depression. Now, you're right about it. It was Saxe-Coburg-Gotha was the royal family's surname, but that came about because Queen Victoria married Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, and therefore Queen Victoria took his surname. The change of name to the House of Windsor was, yes, for presentational reasons. Germany decided to start World War I. The Germans were very unpopular, understandably, since they'd been gassing our troops and behaving, not playing the game of cricket, and behaving brutally, raping Belgian nuns and so on, and bayoneting babies, all the sorts of things that we expect the Germans to get up to in wartime. And understandably, George V decided to change the surname to Windsor. That was just demonstrating his patriotism. He was as British as they come. And Victoria was, Prince Albert was a very nice man. In fact, he was quite odd. As I explained in my book, Spy Hunter, the German plan, of course, when Victoria ascended the throne in 1837, there was no Germany. We had the German states.
Yes.
It was already intended then that the German states would unify. What happened in 1848, the Zollverein and so on, that was all anticipated in 1837. And what the Germans were hoping was that Albert would exercise influence over the young queen and would report to the Prussians. Now, Albert actually resisted that pressure and became very patriotic, very pro-British, and was a great support for his queen. And they fell in love. I don't think the Germans were anticipating that. It's something they didn't allow for in their cunning plan, because the marriage wasn't a love match. The marriage was an arranged state marriage, but it so happened that Victoria and Albert became romantically very close. It's rather charming. And we see this, the television program on ITV isn't badly done. I mean, it does, you get an impression from that program of the closeness of Victoria and Albert.
But they were puppets, weren't they, these people? Because I've seen...
Well, they weren't. That was the point.
Well, let me just make a point. I've seen enough evidence over the years in my own research to see that through the centuries, this is not a 18th or a 19th century phenomenon. It began in the 15th, 16th centuries. The financial houses of the world were marrying the royal families of the world, and this continued. And that was a deliberate strategy, I believe. I believe this is a bloodline thing. I know you think I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist, but I think it's borne out.
I would hesitate to suggest that, Richie.
Right, and let me just... Thanks, Michael. He says...
I don't confuse you with Alex Jones.
No. Well, look, Alex has touched on some of this over the years as well with certain guests. He's maybe not gotten into it as much as I have on this programme. But any cursory historian who really looks into the causes of World War One can see the financial elites of the day and their hand and the part they played in it, namely the House of Rothschild. And again, this is not me saying that, you know, everything's a Rothschild conspiracy. It isn't.
Yeah, but the Rothschilds are very close to German intelligence. I mean, it's because the Rothschilds are Jewish. Well, they're not Jewish, they're Khazars.
Absolutely. Well done. Well said, my friend. Well said. Now, you said a minute ago that German intelligence controlled banks. I can't buy into that. Not for a minute. Nobody controls these financial elite powerhouses.
They do. If they have access to... all the banks to generate their profits, or most of their profits, offshore, and the profits stay offshore, which is why it was easy for the Germans to pull the rug from under banks in 2008. And given the vast amounts of cash that can be earned in offshore high-yield trading programs, so given that they're run from Frankfurt... It's not difficult to exercise influence over banks.
This is brilliant. Can we move this up to the... Because I love having you on. I'd prefer to have you on for 2 hours, to be honest. But we don't... No, I would. I'm not patronising you. You know that. I love listening to you. Let's move this up then. So this federal superstate that was meant to have materialised after the Second World War didn't. And it's never gone away. Now, I've read an amazing book called The Nazi Roots of the Brussels EU. It's incredible. And a lot of it tallies with what you've been saying to me now. It goes right back. So basically what we've seen is a constant movement towards a European Union, federal super state, loss of sovereignty for every country in the continent to be controlled centrally from Germany. That's never gone away, right? And that's what you've always believed. And we've moved up now. The UK voted to leave, I don't believe, on the grounds of xenophobia or any of that nonsense. People had seen what the European Union project had done to jobs, what it had done to trade, what it had done to living conditions and working conditions. People said enough is enough is enough. And you believe before the referendum even took place that a young politician was murdered, namely Joe Cox, in order to instigate or incite some sort of revulsion amongst people and make them vote for Remain. So does that mean that you believe, people are going to say I'm stupid now because it's obvious that you're saying this, Thomas Mayer, who's in jail for the rest of his life, he'll never see the light of day, never did it. You believe that Mayer is an innocent man?
No. I think Mayer was put up to it. And I think my point is that Mayer did not act alone. It's quite standard for someone who's convicted or takes the fall for these murders, shootings and so on. It's quite standard that they don't talk about what motivated them, or at least they talk about it, but they're lying and sort of creating the impression of a right-wing motive where none existed. Mayer had no known political right-wing connections in this country at all. There was a very slender connection to a pro-apartheid group in South Africa who actually, I think, published a letter from him, and that was the extent. I spoke to the editor of the newspaper concerned, or the journal concerned. That was the last I heard of him. He may have been on the right politically, but he wasn't active. He had no known far-right connections in this country at all. The idea that he was acting for far-right political motives is frankly absurd. He wasn't acting alone. The idea to murder Joe Cox wasn't his. I think he participated in the murder, but I think...
Was he coerced? Was he coerced somehow? Was he medically coerced into doing it? Was his mind messed with, maybe?
Yeah, people talk about MK Ultra and mind control. I'm not sure I would go down that route. More likely he was coerced or threatened. Usually it's either a combination of bribes or blackmail or threats, and sometimes it's a threat to family members, not a threat to the person themselves. I don't know. All I know is that Mayer did not act alone, that the murder of Joe Cox was sanctioned by the cabinet secretary, Jeremy Haywood, who's now dead, so we can now speak truthfully about him.
Well, I was going to ask you that. The next obvious question for any half-baked presenter is, MI6 must be asleep on their watch then. If German intelligence can rock into the country, take an innocent man, and one way or another coerce him into committing a heinous murder, where's MI6? You're saying basically it's a stitch-up. They're all involved in it.
Well, MI6, of course, is external. The internal agency of the UK...
MI5, of course. Excuse me, of course, Michael. Well, yeah, so where were MI5 then?
Well, the trouble... MI5 were at Thames House, sitting on their hands. They didn't do anything. The problem that MI5 have got is that they are penetrated by GO2, which has its headquarters at Vauxhall Cross, the headquarters of MI6. But MI6 don't have access to all of the building. GO2 are in a secure part of the building, and MI6 can't get in. And yes, I've had my discussions with Six about how we close down GO2, but it's not that easy. It's backed by the Cabinet Office. MI6 can't get instructions from the Cabinet Office because all the agencies report to the Cabinet Office. Now, this is also MI5's problem. The structure of intelligence in this country, which is set up by German intelligence, is that MI6, MI5, GCHQ all report to the Cabinet Office. Not the Prime Minister, but in practice to the Cabinet Secretary. So, for example, last week, recently, the Cabinet Secretary was able to order GCHQ to say they had no concerns about Huawei taking over, in inverted commas, non-core parts of the G5 network, which in fact, GCHQ are deeply troubled by it. But because they report to the Cabinet Office, they had to go along with the Cabinet Office line. Because five report to the Cabinet Office, they are hamstrung. And we need to change that so that the intelligence agencies report to the Prime Minister, not the Cabinet Secretary. And we need to get the Cabinet Office out of intelligence collection and analysis, which means restoring the Joint Intelligence Committee machinery to full independence. At the moment, the JIC machinery is subordinated to the Cabinet Office. The assessment staff are part of the Cabinet Office, not separate.
There are people listening to this now who'll be annoyed by you speaking like this, and they will say that you're insinuating that this is an administration issue. And there are people listening to this who will say that there were terror attacks in this country, one in this city of Manchester, where 22 people were killed. Mm-hmm. And there are so many holes in that story about Salman Abedi. So this is not just administration. There's massive corruption going on there, and there is evidence that the intelligence agencies of this country, whom we're told are here to protect us from bad guys, are not only not doing that, but they are colluding and working with those who would come in and stage false flag attacks here, because those false flag attacks lead to another agenda, because society can be transformed. People can be transformed. They're more willing to accept a more draconian, a more Orwellian type of governance in their own country. So there's all this evidence out there. And I've had former MI5 agents on this programme who talked about Tunworth. You know, it's unbelievable that Salman Abedi's father was Agent Tunworth and was working with the British intelligence to kill Gaddafi in the 1990s. And then his son turns up in Manchester and blows himself to pieces. It's just filthy. So it's not an administration issue, Michael. It's something grotesquely wrong with what's going on here. It's not just administrative and, you know, as you're saying, go ahead.
Well, reporting lines are very important. The intelligence agencies, because they report to the Cabinet Office, are not able to function effectively. And Manchester is a classic example. We know that GO2 arranged Manchester. We know that the terrorist who blows himself up is not acting alone. There's at least one other terrorist inside the arena whose device didn't go off. We know that GO2 provided all the logistical support. And, you know, the Janet and John version of events presented to the public is absolute nonsense. But it all goes back to GO2. We've got to shut down GO2. A GO2 work with a German electronics company, who I won't name on the program, but they run a telephone tapping or communications intercept center in London, and that taps the telephones of all MPs, including obviously members of the cabinet, all senior judges, senior civil servants, senior military officers, and so on. And it was they who tapped the phones of the defense, because they were tapping the phones of the defense secretary. It was they who picked up the call between the Secretary of State for Defense and the deputy political editor of the Sun, of the Daily Telegraph. And that transcript is then goes from the electronics interception, the listening post in London. It goes from the German listening post in London into GO2 at Vauxhall Cross. And then it goes to the Cabinet Office. And that's the evidence on which the Cabinet Secretary recommended to the Prime Minister that the Secretary of State for Defence be fired. In fact, he didn't recommend to the Prime Minister, he told
he demanded it. But you know, it doesn't change the fact, whether it's German intelligence, whether it's Mossad, whether it's the National Security Agency, whether it's CIA, it doesn't change anything. The fact is that horrific events are staged in this country, where in some cases they're completely fake and nothing happens at all. In other cases, people get blown to pieces. And it's done to further an agenda, the agenda that we're talking about. And sitting back watching it all going on are MI5 and MI6.
Well, they're not. In fairness, they're not sitting back and watching it on, but they're
participating in it.
They're trying to prevent, the MI5 are desperate to prevent terrorist attacks in this country. Of course they are, but they're hampered because they report to the Cabinet Office. So if the Cabinet Office tell them to back off, there's not much they can do. And we have to shut down this listing post, and we have to shut down GO2, and we have to take intelligence collection analysis out of the hands of the Cabinet Secretary. And we have to restore proper intelligence assessments machinery. And until we do that, we can't function as an independent country, because we don't have control, effectively, we don't have control of our intelligence services.
Let alone control of our fiscal policy policies and everything else, yeah.
You mentioned several agencies there, but Mossad and NSA, and I've worked with both, they're the good guys.
No, they're not, Michael. Israel is an illegitimate, brutal, apartheid state that spends most of its time murdering pregnant women and children. It has no right to exist. You know this, Sykes-Picot. We could go into the Balfour Declaration. Most Jews that I know don't support it. It is the worst of the worst. It is a plague on the Middle East, that country. And it's been involved, their agents have been involved in September the 11th. There's no doubt there was Mossad agents involved on the 7th of July. That's a fact. We know this. And this thing, if you've given him a pass, Israel, I'm not having it, not on this programme. There's no more evil regime, and I'm not talking about Israeli citizens. I'm talking about the Israeli administrations, one after the other, brutally suppressing a people in the biggest open-air concentration camp in the world, the righteous people of that region. They're not a race, they have no claim to the place. And you know what, I don't care who listens, I don't care who complains about me saying that. Don't give them a pass, Michael. You know that Mossad have been not only treating, but rearming ISIS fighters and sending them back into Syria. You know this to be true. Go ahead.
Well, I don't. I say Mossad are the good guys. They're awfully nice people. And I'm a big, strong supporter of the State of Israel. So we will have to disagree. We'll have to agree to differ.
Well, we'll never fall out. I don't know what to call myself an intellect. We're never going to fall out about these things. We're mature. We're not snowflakes. I love you. I'll have you back. And I don't know what you're doing, whether you're being strategic with this and the Frankfurt Rothschilds and all the rest of it. But look, there wouldn't be half the problems we have in the Middle East and in other parts of the world without the behaviour of the Israeli government and its agents, in my opinion.
Look, I respectfully disagree. I mean, the problem lies with German support for the Islamic terror in the Middle East. And you've got Iran, which is a major player. And Iran is currently, its client on Gaza, Islamic Jihad, is currently mounting disgraceful attacks onto Israeli territory. And I must never forget that the Jews were there first. The Arabs only roll up in the 6th, 7th, 8th centuries. The Jews have been there for the better part of a millennium before that.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? And they do fund scientists and people who say that, but historically, unfortunately, it doesn't bear up historically. They have there is no evidence that there was any group calling themselves the Jews in that region. It's all biblical nonsense and Torah nonsense. What they've done there, everything that led up to the creation of the State of Israel was illegitimate and wrong, but they're there now. I think every country in the world came to being through bloodshed and through stealing of land.
I have to part company with their respect. There's no doubt that the Jewish people were in the Holy Land, or what we call the Holy Land, long before Muhammad and his boys roll up. And there's no doubt.
You need to read some Shlomo Zand, my friend.
Yeah.
Israel
is the ancient Jewish homeland.
And Jews are not a race either. Jews are white people who believe in a fairy godfather in the sky, just as Christians are and just as Muslims are. That's just my opinion. But I respectfully...
Well, I would agree with you there that it's wrong to characterize Jews as a race. Judaism is a religion like Christianity. We talk of the Judeo-Christian civilization. Yes, if you go to Israel, I've been to Israel, I love the place. It's a religious state. It's a Jewish state.
But there are a number of different
ethnicities. I mean, you can have Ethiopian Jews. You can have Russian Jews. You can have the racial mix is quite broad in Israel.
Which Jews were there first, in your opinion, the black Jews or the European Jews?
Oh, you mean the Shepa? Well, I'm not sure.
Thank you. And this is a country, by the way, that sterilized Ethiopian Jews. I mean, they're the worst of the worst, these. And when I say people, I don't mean Israelis and I don't mean Jews, because you and I both know plenty of Jews.
Why would anyone in Israel want to sterilize Ethiopian Jews?
No, but you know this to be true. Google it. Google it when we're finished speaking. This is accepted. It's a historic fact. They did. Within Israel. Within the country. Hang on. Google it. Within the State of Israel. This goes back to the 1970s. Ethiopian Jewish women were sterilized in the country. There was a program to do that. In my opinion, it's a racist state that has no right to exist, shouldn't be there, but it is. And until our governments sanction them back to the Stone Age for what it is they do to the righteous people of the land, of the region, well, nothing is ever going to change. And thankfully, most Jews I know, they don't support it, they don't agree with it. But I'm going to give you the final word on that, because I've said enough on it, and my listeners know my thoughts on it anyway. Final word on that today. And do come back and talk Maddie McCann another time, will you? Because you've done some really interesting stuff there. I'd love to have you back on to talk about that specifically. Final word to you, Michael, and sincere thanks for giving us your time today.
Well, we're not going to agree about Israel. I'm pro-Israeli. You're not as pro-Israel as I am. I think they're very nice people. And I love working with Mossad, and they're very fine, very, very fine, very nice people, very professional. Madeleine McCann, yes, we all know the story there. She was kidnapped by a DVD paedophile ring, and she was going to be supplied for sexual abuse to a member or a senior official of the European Commission in Brussels. Obviously, I'm not going to name the official. I do know who it was. So does British intelligence. So do the Americans. So do Mossad. And in order to disguise the role of the European Commission, the British government took a deliberate decision to sacrifice Madeleine McCann. And sadly, tragically, the poor girl was murdered in December 2008 in Belgium. What is currently going on is an absolute disgrace. It is a hoax by the Metropolitan Police, now working with the judicial police in Portugal. It is a cruel hoax. It is holding out the hope to the parents who have suffered enough, surely, that their daughter is still alive. Any parent is going to want to believe that, but to deliberately mislead parents in this way and to deprive them of closure is cruel. What happened to their daughter was cruel. What is being done to the parents now is magnifying and amplifying the original cruelty, and it's got to stop. Somebody has got to go to the parents and tell them the truth. But of course, the government won't do it because Theresa May is the monkey, if no offence intended, to the cabinet secretary's organ grinder. The cabinet office will never permit the truth about the McCann kidnap to be told because they're terrified of the involvement of the European Commission coming out. And they're terrified that if the British public got to know that Madeleine McCann was kidnapped to the order of a senior official in Brussels, that that might damage further the public support for the European Union, which is which was a minority view in 2016 and has declined further since.
Which is where we came in. Listen, if yes. I've been a bit shouty about Israel and that, I am going to apologise. I'm big enough to do that. No, and you and I have
you hold strong views. They don't happen to agree with mine, but so what?
But your views are just as valid or as relevant to you as mine are to me. So I've got to bear that in mind. I don't
refuse to come onto programmes because I don't agree with everything that the presenter is going to say.
Well, it's one of the things I love about you. And before you go. That's becoming a major problem in our society, isn't it? Where people are being kind of denounced by association. There's a lovely woman called Anna Breeze. Anna's a journalist who worked for the BBC and she worked for ITV. She's gone out on her own now. A couple of weeks ago, she came on the programme. Now, look, it's not about this programme. I don't matter. But Private Eye and one or two others went after her, saying that she came on a programme with a notorious anti-Semite. Now, look, I don't care. They can call me what they want. I don't mind that. But it's happened before, not with this programme, but with other... We can't have that. So, I mean, to have proper discourse, people have got to be adult enough to say, well, listen, I really like Shrimpton. I don't care what he disagrees with me on. I like him and I'm prepared to sit down and listen to him and vice versa. But it seems that... And I think it's... I want to get your opinion on this. We've only got about 2 minutes left. It seems to me like this is a kind of a forced agenda. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying it's happening today. The Guardian today is smearing Nigel Farage as an anti-Semite, which is utter nonsense. I've known Nigel for nearly 30 years. He's no more an anti-Semite than I am. Smearing him because he has gone on to the Alex Jones show. So what they're doing is projecting Alex Jones's views, with which Nigel and I might not necessarily agree on some subjects. They're projecting the presenter's views onto a guest. It's just nonsense on stilts. You may as well say that all the guests on Question Time agree with the European Union because Fiona Bruce happens to be a Remainer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous nonsense. It's the Guardian story today simply isn't rational. It's also not fair and verging on the libelous, I should have thought.
It is libelous, yeah. It's kind of making people and presenters and political figures persona non grata. So Alex went on, there was a Liverpool University professor who was used to be a regular guest on this programme, but he was hammered for coming on, again, because of my views on Israel, but also because he wanted to deselect the Labour MP who happens to be Jewish, Luciana Berger. Now, you can make a very good argument that he shouldn't be trying to deselect, and you can argue about that all day. I've no problems with that.
Well, yeah, but Luciana Berger has since defected from the Labour Party. I'm not sure the opposition to Luciana Berger wasn't solely because she was Jewish. Yes, there was an anti-Semitic element to it, but that does not follow that everyone in her constituency wanting to remove her was anti-Semitic or removing her because she was Jewish.
They were yeah, well done. That's exactly what it was. They saw her as not towing the Corbyn line. It didn't have anything to do with her.
Well, she was disloyal to the Labour Party. She's defected. She's left the party and joined this crazy bunch of centrist Remainers.
Lunatics. But you know what? That's the point. So Alex Scott-Samuel is turfed out, basically, because they used the fact that he'd come on programmes like this, and in fact, he didn't say anything anti-Semitic on this programme, but because I've interviewed people before who've denied the Holocaust, you see. You know, of course, they have been robustly challenged on the programme, you know.
X makes a silly statement about the Holocaust.
I challenge him, yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't say you agree with him.
And no.
To impose the views of other guests on a radio show with another guest is just, I'm not a Holocaust denier. For anyone to say, oh, Shrimpton's a Holocaust denier because he's been on the Richie Allen Show, and somebody on the Richie Allen Show 5 years ago also happened to be a Holocaust denier, that's not rational. It's not worthy of, it's not logical.
No, but you'll get it, you see, on Twitter later. Somebody will say on Twitter, oh, Shrimpton went on the on the Richie Allen Show. I mean, I know my history. I know what happened in Germany. And I've been there. I've seen some of these horrendous places.
The Holocaust happened.
Absolutely, you know. But when you bring these people on, it's your job to challenge them. My listeners would hate me if I didn't challenge you on your assertions about the Germans, and you might very well be right.
How many Jews were murdered, we can argue about. I actually don't think the figure, I think the figure of 6 million is rounded up. I think the figure was about 5.75 million. I'm not sure I'd go as high as 6 million, but 5.75 million is still genocide, and it's murder on an industrial scale. And we're only arguing, the dispute is about the precise numbers because they're difficult to calculate, because proper records weren't kept, and insofar as they were kept, many of them were destroyed in 1945. So inevitably, there's room for debate about how many people were murdered. We know the Nazis overall murdered about 13 million people. It wasn't just Jews, it was gays, there were gypsies as well, and socialists and political opponents of the Nazis, communists. The total was around about 13 million, 12 to 13 million. That was one of the biggest crimes in history. It wasn't actually the worst crime for which the German state was responsible. That was the influenza epidemic at the end of World War I, which killed more than four times as many people, about 50 million in total. And it wasn't the worst crime in history. That was probably, that was the Black Death, clearly, which inflicted casualties of the order of 25% to a third of the male, of the adult, the entire population of a number of European states. In the Middle Ages. So it wasn't the greatest crime. It was the third greatest. The Holocaust was the third greatest crime in history, but that still makes it a very serious crime indeed.
Indeed. Final word to you. You've got 10 seconds to answer this. I know the answer because I know how you feel about Israel. When scholars like Norman Finkelstein, whose aunt and whose mother were at Auschwitz, which must have been hell on earth for them, when he says that Israel has propagandized, now he doesn't say that, of course, I'm paraphrasing him, and I don't even think there is such a term, but they've used what happened in Germany. They've exploited it and the memory of those dead Jews in order to further their own Greater Israel project, the displacement of Palestinians. They use the Holocaust basically to get away with the bad things that they do. You have 10 seconds to answer. It's unfair to give you 10 seconds. When Finkelstein says this, does he have a point?
No. Israel is entitled to point to the genocide against the Jews, the German genocide against the Jews. I don't say Nazi genocide, I say German genocide against the Jews, because it was prompted by German intelligence for strategic reasons to do with oil in the Middle East. The Israelis absolutely entitled to point towards the treatment of Jews by Germany in the Nazi period. And any points they take about the Holocaust, frankly, are fair ones.
Always good to have you on. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure.
Thanks for being up for a good argument. Enjoy the coming weeks in the cricket. And please, during the summer, when there isn't any cricket, let's talk about the McCann murder. And the thing about you as well, you've had a over the years, you've looked into different things, other mysteries and murders. I'd love to have a good old chinwag for an hour some evening in the summer, Michael. Thanks so much for
a midsummer murder show.
Why not? And by the way, I can't recommend highly enough, if you've not read Michael's book Spy Hunter, it is fantastic. It really is. I've read it. I'll tweet a link out to where you can get it, by the way. If you've not read it, it is a must read. It's one of the best books of the last 10-15 years. Michael, thanks, mate. Speak soon. Look after yourself.
Thank you. You too.
Bye for now. Michael Shrimpton, our guest this hour, and I'm a man of my word. I'm not going to editorialise. I'm not going to say any more on Israel or any of the rest of it. Always good for a bit of banter there. We're coming up for 10 minutes past the hour. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. It is May 7th. Got to take some music. There have been a lot of comments come in there. Go to Twitter. Interact with other listeners as they are tweeting the programme. and get involved. It's Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I'll take a song to buy myself a breather. I'm going to have a little sip of water. When we come back, Ben Gilroy joins the programme live from Navan. This guy's a bit special. It's been quite a long time since he was on this programme. He's been through the ringer over the last few months, but also the last few years. He's a politician, he's an activist, he's a human rights campaigner, and he's done more than anybody to highlight the scourge, the horror of wrongful evictions in Ireland and houses being gulped up by criminal banks and sold off to vulture funds. He's taken on the banks, he's paid a heavy price for that, and he's had a lot of personal stuff to deal with over the years as well. A very publicised illness, his beautiful daughter Isabella dealing with cancer as well. He's a great guy. He's been in Mountjoy jail recently. He came out a few weeks ago. Back on the Richie Allen Show in a moment. While I get him on the programme, I've not even got a song lined up, have I? I have something. Right, here's Madness on the Richie Allen Show. Into the second hour we go. Ben Gilroy live on the programme from Navan, and I will be looking carefully at the tweets. If there's a question for Ben, I will put it to him. Tweet at Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. My name is Richie Allen. Ben Gilroy next. This is Madness with Our House. Madness and Our House. Let's get rid of that. 12 minutes past the hour. Right, I said everything that I can say about my next guest, so I won't give you the big long-winded introduction. I mentioned who he is and what he's done in the last couple of minutes. He will be standing for MEP for Direct Democracy Ireland, a party that he is heavily involved in and was heavily involved in founding. And talked a few minutes ago about his legal troubles this year, the actions that he's taken on behalf of people who found themselves wrongfully evicted and out of a home. Amazing stuff. This began speaking to him back in 2013 when I was making television in London. Let's welcome back to the programme Ben Gilroy. Ben, thanks for coming back on, mate. How are you?
No problem, Richie. All good.
You've had some time for this year. Let our listeners know how you came to be in jail, and talk about that action against Allied Irish Banks. Ben, what was it like? I mean, I can't imagine what it was like. It must have been a horrible experience for you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's the system hitting back. It had nothing to do with, that I did anything wrong. It was basically corrupt judges when I got too close to the nerve, showing me that they had all the power and they were going to send me to jail. It was nothing more than that. And that's what happened. And that's really it. You know, I was, dare you fight a bank in Ireland and stand up against corruption, but you'll be jailed in the system.
You'll be jailed for something as ridiculous as a community service order. What is that? I mean, I know that you were acting on behalf of somebody, and you've been doing that for years, and you made some caustic or sarcastic comments, but they were more than sarcastic. They were real and they were genuine about what the bank was doing, what the court was doing, holding a gun to somebody's head. You were critical of the court. They wanted you to do community service for that. You refused. I mean, that's brave, and I've total respect for that. And then they banged you up for it. So what is a community service order?
Well, a community service order is, instead of going to jail for 3 months, they give you that you do community service for 80 hours. But I'll clarify a couple of things. I was in court with a judge called Brian McGovern, who is one of the most bent judges in there. And I don't mind saying that on the airways, because that's really what got me into trouble in the court. He said it was an attack on the administration of justice. It absolutely is not. Brian McGovern does not administer justice, for starters. He's biased, absolute biased. If you're in against a bank or a receiver or a vulture fund, you may forget about it. He's also a member of a secret society, which he took great problem with when I put that in an affidavit. But he never denied it. And I know for a fact that all those judges are members of a secret society within the Law Society called the Benchers. I also know Tony Blair, a war criminal, is a member of that.
No way.
And I know his wife is a member of it. And why they're involved in an Irish legal system, I've no idea. But also a number of barristers are members of that society as well. And what I was saying was that I'm a fan of the administration of justice. First of all, let me say that because it's important to say that. But the biggest threat to the administration of justice is solicitors, barristers and judges being part of a secret society where deals are done in the background and the case is already decided before you go into court. That is the biggest threat to the administration of justice, of which Brian McGovern has no idea about. Now, I was threatened with 6 months in jail and I got a barrister under free legal aid. And of course, that was the worst thing I ever did. It was the first time I ever used a barrister and they got me into more trouble than I was ever in because he said you have to plead guilty to criminal contempt. I wasn't happy doing about criminal contempt because, first of all, criminal contempt is just bullshit that was made up by these benchers within the Irish legal system. Secondly, it's not on our statute book. There's no contempt on the Irish statute book. And thirdly, our constitution is very clear that the Oireachtas is the sole provider for making law in the country. So none of this is on a statute book. This is just members of a secret society showing me who's boss. And of course, you know, they're actually too stupid to be corrupt, as I told McGovern, because when they actually sent me to jail, there were so many errors in it, you just wouldn't believe. So I'll explain some of them, Richie, without hogging the microphone, but it's important that people know this.
Hey, just before you and the floor is yours. We can go till 7 o'clock and the floor is yours. Just before you do, you've knocked me sideways here. There's a secret society called the Benchers, and you've got senior judges on there and senior barristers. And you said Cherie and Tony Blair are on this.
Yep.
How did you come by this information? I want to verify, because my listeners will be like, come on, how do you know this to be true? Yeah.
Well, when the show is finished, Richie, I will put a link into your box where Richard Boy Barrett, who's a sitting TD in our House of Oireachtas, if you like, had warned the Irish people that he had found out this information. And he was given the information by someone inside, if you like. And he put a video out in the Dáil when they were talking about a judge's bill. And he was saying that this is a huge problem in Ireland. And the EU have already come out and said it's a huge problem, that there's no redress system against corrupt judges. And they can jail people with impunity if you dare say it to them. Now, if you think of the situation is we have an elected TD warning the Irish people that this is going on. And the minute I mention it in the courts, I get jail.
Yeah.
But further than that, there was myself and my friend were in the courts one day and a case had been adjourned. So we were in Dublin and we said, look, we'll see the listing, see if there's any interesting things going on in the courts. And of course, there was an action in the Supreme Court called Call to the Bar. And this is where new barristers are called to the bar. And I was never present at one of these before, so I thought it'd be interesting and I'd go in and see it. And when I was in the court, the tip staff came out a number of times and said, no recording, no recording. You have to wait till the judges go and then you can record. Now, for someone like me who understands corruption, that what I heard was, you must record this, you must record this. That's what I heard. So I start recording. Frank Clark, the Chief Justice, comes out and he calls each barrister by the name and they stand up and they do a little bow. And then he says, the benchers of the Honourable Society of King's Inn call you to the bar.
No way.
Absolutely. And I have a recording of that.
Fantastic.
That we can supply as well, because corruption has to be exposed in Ireland and I'm the man to do it. And I've the balls to do it. And if I have to go to jail again, so be it. Sure. You know, I've young kids and I have to provide a proper Ireland for them to grow up in. So here you have the benchers of the Honourable Society of King's Inn. Nothing honourable about them, by the way. And that's why you have to call them that. Calling young barristers to the bar. Now, it's not Ireland, or it's not the Minister of Justice, or it's not the State of Ireland, or, you know, it's none of those things. It's the benchers of the Honourable Society.
My God. It sounds like a plot from a John Grisham book, and I don't say that for a laugh. It really does.
No, exactly. And people listening to this might think that I've lost me marbles or something, because it's so outrageous that most people couldn't believe it. And of course, that's part of the trick, that they'll fob you off and laugh and, oh, that's a ridiculous thing. But of course, it's not. And it's true. And if you go on to any of the law societies in Ireland and do control F the benchers, they will sort of come up, very little about them. And if you ring the Law Society inquiring about it, you'll be told very little. So that's the problem we have in Ireland. Now, what happened then is I discovered that Allied Irish Banks had two rogue companies, one in Northern Ireland and one in London, that they were using for trading mortgages and coming into Irish courts pretending they still hold the mortgage. But what they did was to differentiate the company. In the Dublin company, they are called Allied Irish Banks, PLC. And in London and Belfast, they're called Allied Irish Banks, PLC. So only the comma is missing. And I got this highlighted in the Oireachtas Committee. And this is all on public record. And again, I'll drop some of the speech into your box and I'll highlight it in yellow from the actual Oireachtas Committee, where Piers Doherty, another member of our parliament, he asked Bernard Byrne, the CEO at the Oireachtas Financial Committee, he said, when Allied Irish Banks are in court, he says, and he said, there's a comma. If one misses the comma, he said, are we talking about a totally different company? And of course they admitted, yes, we're talking about a totally different company. So the problem was, I knew the London company was the company who had brought us to court, and I sued the Dublin company. And, of course, the Dublin company, the two secretaries in that company said, we had nothing to do with that court case, right?
Wow. This
and, of course,
unbelievable.
Then the judges start going mad because most of them are either bondholders within these companies or shareholders or have mortgages with them or got loans written off by them. And this is how this works. So McGovern was very nervous. When I was actually cross-examining, and again, I have the transcript of the cross-examination that I can put into the box for anybody to read, and you watch how many times McGovern interrupts me when I'm cross-examining and getting to the heart of the matter.
No way, the sitting judge is there. You're getting somewhere with this guy about these two companies, and he's basically interrupting your flow. He's getting in the way, as I'm doing now, ironically.
He's actually interrupting, saying, I gave instructions, you can't ask him about that. You can only ask him about this. And move on, Mr. Gilroy. And I heard Mr. Gilroy, move on, don't ask him that. And then he even says to the witness, don't you answer that. And then on one occasion, when I actually had the guy in trouble in relation to something, the senior partner of Beecham Solicitors turns and prompts him on the stand. And I call it to the attention of the judge, and he does nothing, only move on. And the next day when I confronted him and I said, you showed your bias again, I said, because this lady, I won't mention her, I said, this lady prompted the witness. McGovern says to me, she was probably only passing him a note. And I said, oh, you can pass a note to someone being cross-examined on the sly while in the witness box. I mean, this is the type of stuff. If you were to see this in North Korea, you'd be rolling around the place laughing. And the beauty about it is I have all the records, the transcripts and everything from this. So if anybody's interested, you know, there's no problem. It's a great read. But unfortunately, it's like something out of a Laurel and Hardy movie, you know, or the Three Stooges in court or
this
something.
This is astonishing stuff. Ben Gilroy is our guest. Ben will be standing for MEP for Direct Democracy Ireland. I've known Ben for years. This is incredible. You're cross-examining the AIB CEO while he's on the stand. You're talking to him about a company in London that's AIB PLC, but there's a comma in the name of it. You're determining that these are two different companies. And the judge is trying to obfuscate, to move you on, to not allow you to do this. Surely there are codes of conduct. Surely there are rules and regulations that the judges are bound by. that he can't do this.
They're little Hitlers and they can do what they want. And just to correct you, a couple of things. I'm not running for direct democracy this time. I'm going independent.
You're going
in
independent.
Dublin.
Sorry, Ben. Yeah, independent in Dublin.
Not, I still like the principle, obviously, of direct democracy, but for Europe, I'm going as an independent. Secondly, it was a manager who's claiming he was working for this company. And then when I asked him which company, the Dublin or the London, he didn't know. Then he said he was an officer at the bank. Then I referred to the Articles of Association of what an officer is. And then he wasn't an officer. And all of a sudden, then he didn't know who he was. He didn't know what company he was working for. And then the prompting starts. And this is all, you know, then the judge, move on, move on. You can't ask him that. You can't ask him this. And then he actually says to the witness, you don't answer that question.
No way. It's like a French farce. It's like you said, Laurel and Hardy. Now, explain to our listeners why it's important that mortgage holders in Ireland understand this. What's the significance of the two companies? What's going on there, the two different EIBs?
The significance of this is if most people check their land registry, they will see a charge in the name of the London Bank, which is without the comma. And in documents, I've read several documents, whether they be prospectus documents and everything, they're very careful to always put the comma in when it should be in and leave it out when it should be left out. So they know. Now, look, at anybody knows, a listener knows, Richie, that if you're talking about a company and there's a company that you changed the name with and you set it up in a different country and you just leave out a comma, You know something shifty is going on.
Something's wrong, yeah.
You know, we're all smart people. So they come in and they pretend they own the mortgage, but probably the London company may own the mortgage, but it's certainly not the Dublin company that you took the mortgage without at the original. And if you look at your original documents, you'll see the comma is always in. Or if you get a letter from the Dublin company, the comma is always in. But they'll just say you're behind on your mortgage. They don't say, oh, we own your mortgage and you're behind money to us. So they're very careful. It's a very sneaky thing. And it's really something that was very hard to uncover. You know, but when you know there's fraud, you go looking with a fine-tooth comb because it's always there. And so I'll tell you what happened then in the court. I eventually lost the cool because on one of the occasions we were in court, the judge had ordered me to withdraw applications at Land Registry. And I said, you can't order me to do that. In Ireland, our law is that if it's not illegal, right, if it's not against law, you have the right to do it. It doesn't matter what it is. If it's not against law, you have the entitlement to do it. And I told him it's not against the law for me to transfer properties, and therefore you can't order me without a hearing. Now, remember, he did this ex parte, and an ex parte mandatory injunction is almost impossible to get anywhere in the world except in front of McGovern. And so I came into him the next day and I said to him, Judge, you're ordering me to do something here that I have a perfect right to do. And I said, there's also a jurisdiction issue. He told me, no, I didn't order that. He said, just freeze the moment, freeze the moment. And I said, that's great. I've no problem with that. The next time we were in court, he said, now is the Gardaí here, or the police, as you would say over there, is the police in court? These people are in breach of my order and blah, 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 and we'll send them to jail. And I said, hold on a second, Judge. I said, you know, where's the right to a fair trial? I said, walked in the court door and you're calling the police for jail. I said, how does that, you know, bring around a fair trial? And I said to him, you told us a freezing order. He said, I did not. I said, you absolutely did.
And it's in the transcript.
He said, that's right. And then I said to him, you absolutely did say it. He said, well, I'd like to see the transcript on that. With that, the barrister for whatever AIB stood up. And he said, oh, Judge, there is a transcript. The judge's next comment was, well, if I said that, I didn't mean it. I can't remember my children's names. Now, this is this is like where we could have nearly gone to jail on this guy's lunacy. But anyway, as the case progressed with this sort of shit, I eventually exploded. And I put in an affidavit that he was biased, a wig wearer who was a member of a secret society. All of that was true, by the way. And he gave me he was going to do me for contempt of court, criminal contempt. So they afforded me a barrister in criminal law because I wouldn't be well up in criminal law. And the barrister said, oh, you're better off apologising and they might reduce the sentence. And I said, but sure, who's going to hear the case of me being in contempt? And he said, Judge McGovern. And I said, but sure, he can't be a judge in his own cause. And of course, He said, oh, no, he will, because this is Ireland. Like, you know, oh, he will, you know. And that can't be allowed. Now, it's important to say when I was in jail, the Supreme Court came out with a ruling that a judge cannot be a judge in his own cause because EU legislation had kicked in. And they know that Ireland is an absolute basket case with these head cases going around with wigs on. So in any event, I had to go before them. I did apologise in court, which I absolutely did not mean. And he gave me 3 months suspended where I was to do community service. Now, then I went to the court and I brought an application that the proper AIB should be on the court papers because they told the Oireachtas Committee that if they're in without the comma, this is a mistake and the first thing they do is change it. Now, that's absolutely wrong because I wrote to all the directors of the company threatening them with legal action if they didn't do it, and they didn't do it. So I brought an application before the court. Now, it's important to know that there was motions and affidavits being filed in this case that were being kept from me and my friend. They were being kept from us. It was like a secret court case was running. And I asked that we be served with all the motions and stuff. And McGovern said, no, it's nothing to do with you. And I said, but my name has been mentioned in these affidavits and all. And he said, no, it doesn't concern you. And I said, well, it's concerning me. It's concerning me now. So I brought an application to the court on a motion, a written motion. And one was for due process, according to Article 6 of the European Convention on Human Rights. That was denied. I brought an application for due process under the Constitution of Ireland. That was denied. And then I said, in circumstances where I may lose those applications, can I just have a limited due process pursuant to Order 15 of the Rules of Court, which means every party should be served papers within a case. And I was fucking denied that.
No way.
Right? Now, this is all on record.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I was that they accepted was that the name of the proceedings be changed on all the court papers to reflect the Dublin Bank. Now, notwithstanding, I don't know if it was the Dublin Bank who was supposed to be in court. And I've asked the judges, several judges, to ask the barrister exactly what company are they representing in court by reference to the company number. And 3 years later, because this case has gone on 3 years now, we still don't know who the actual plaintiff is in this court case. And that's the Irish court system. So then what happened was the probation service wrote to me and said, you need to do this community service. So I met with them and I said, look, I'm anxious to get the community service done because I just wanted to be out of McGovern's star chambers. I just wanted to be out of it. And I said to the probation service that I wanted the order to be affected on the probation order and everything for the community service for 80 hours because I won a court order that all these things were to be changed to reflect the bank in Dublin. Now, I had no idea whether it was right or wrong, but I knew something was fishy when they still wouldn't do it. So the only people in breach of a court order in this case was the bank, whoever they were, right? Now, the community service says, oh, they'll need to go back to the court to say there's something wrong with the order. Then I get a letter from McGovern, the judge, a letter, mind you, nothing else, saying, please come into the court on the 16th of January till we discuss the community service. So I walk into court on a letter. Now, if this was done by motion and affidavit, none of this would have ever happened and I would have never ended up in jail. But what happened then, and I can put the committal warrants in the box for people to see because this is all public record because it sounds so astonishing. People must be thinking out there that I'm bullshitting.
No, they won't be. I want to remind our listeners as well because maybe some of our listeners might be, what's going on here? Ben has been helping people who've been defrauded by their lender for years and years and years. And he's genuine. And when he's talking about, you know, that he'll take it on and he'll go to jail, it's not bravado. This is not a guy looking for attention here. He's not trying to be a hero. This guy is putting the hard yards for people. You know, Google Ben Gilroy. This is a genuine human being here. And because he's been helping people fight illegal repossession of homes and people getting turfed out on the streets, they've come after him here. And that's what we've learned today. I mean, I'm stunned, but I've known you for years. I've done a dozen conversations with you since 2013. He's always backed up everything he said with the documentation and the proof. Ben is basically saying here, and if I get this very brief summary wrong, correct me.
Yep.
The Irish man and woman is going into court. They're being defrauded by companies like AIB, who are using other companies in London with a slightly different name with a comma. What's going on is, before they even get into court, there is a secret society, it's almost Masonic, where you have judges, where you have barristers, not only in Ireland but in England, involved in a secret society called the Benchers. And Ben is saying that it's such a stitch-up that no matter what evidence you have going in there, no matter how much proof, and by the sounds of it, you made legal arguments that were unimpeachable in that court, but it doesn't matter because it's a stitch-up with this secret society. Holy shit, Ben. I've never heard of anything like this, to be honest.
I know, and that's why I'm running for an MEP, because I think if I had an MEP office behind me, I would be far more successful, because it'd be much harder to jail an MEP. It would be much harder to shut me up.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to do whatever necessary to have a decent legal system for the people in Ireland. And, you know, that's all anybody wants. If the rule of law breaks down, sure, let it be a free-for-all, and, you know, or otherwise let's stick to the rule of law. And that's why I say I'm a fan of the rule of law, so, and the administration of justice. But in any event, I was called in then on the 16th of January, and this is really important. So McGovern then calls two people from the probation service, and he says to me, I just want to see if there's evidence that you've refused to do this community service, and if you have, you're going to jail. So they called up a lady, a very nice lady. I met her, and her evidence was slightly, you know, askew, because she said, I did refuse to do it until they changed the court order. And, you know, you got to remember, there was a court order to change it. So I'm, you know, I wasn't going to do community service on a fake court order. So then I reminded her, I said, but didn't I say to you in your office to make sure you do not say I'm refusing to do it, because I'm not refusing. All I'm saying is they have to obey a court order, change the name, and then I'm anxious to do it and get it over with. She said to the judge, sorry, judge, that's exactly what Mr. Gilroy said to me. Right. McGovern then says, right, I find you refuse to do it, and I'm sending you to Mountjoy Jail for 3 months. Now, I have young kids and everything. You can imagine how I felt, never in trouble with the Gardaí before ever in my life. And they're putting cuffs on me in the court. But McGovern is still spluttering, shite-talking out of him. And I got the dar later on when I was in prison. And you know what he actually says? He says, I'm sending Mr. Gilroy to jail because he's in breach of a court order, paragraphs 3 and 4. No such thing. Here's a clown of a judge now who's obviously gone senile by his own admission because he couldn't remember his own children's names.
Yeah, that's right.
And what he's talking about is a civil contempt in any event. If I was in breach of a court order, paragraphs 3 and 4, that would be a civil contempt, not a criminal contempt. But it was all over the newspapers here why I actually got the community service. And that's because I put in an affidavit calling it as it is. So
how did the newspapers treat you at this particular time? Were the newspapers reporting fairly on this in Ireland?
Not at all. Of course not. There's no free press in Ireland. So it's only shows like yours and Open Your Mind and Vinnie Burns. Anything on the internet radio station that will actually listen to this. If I was on any national radio or television or newspaper, it would be cut immediately. There wouldn't be even any point talking. Or if this was a recorded show, Richie, and you were with RTE, I'd be saying, look, is there any point in me continuing? Because I know it's not going out.
It'd be cut to ribbons. Yeah, cut to ribbons.
The press have not been kind. In fact, they only show up, and TV cameras were there when I brought a habeas corpus application. Now, a lot of people might know what that is, and I know a lot of your listeners also do know what it is. So just for the benefit, I'll give a quick explanation. Habeas corpus means nothing more than produce the body, and it's directed to a governor of a prison that he has to come in and prove that the law, that the detention is lawful. Now, the governor doesn't even show up. He sent an assistant governor. There's no affidavit from the governor. And then the judge says, oh, Mr. Gilroy, we can't look behind the court order. So even though you may be right that you weren't in breach of that court order and it was a civil contempt and blah, 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 we can't look behind it. Well, I said, so you only look at the face of the order. And he suggests, well, I said, the face of the order is wrong because the plaintiff is wrong. There's a court order to change it. That's wrong. And I said, I noticed the date it says I was lodged in Mountjoy Prison on the 17th. I said, unless I was held for 24 hours and drugged against my will, my understanding is I was sent to jail on the morning of the 16th, shortly after I was in court. So then they have this, they let me out for a week while they try and sort this mess out. So then they get an affidavit from the guard to say he made a mistake. It was the 17th. It was the 16th he put me in jail, not the 17th.
Wow.
And then he goes and checks behind the order, and he's happy enough that the case number reflected the plaintiff. And, you know, these are smart people. He knows exactly what I'm saying to him. But because he's putting this in the judgment for public consumption, he just says he's satisfied because the case number is the same. But he doesn't say actually they're in breach of a court order and it's two separate companies and all. He just made it that it was a typo error with a comma. And that's not the case whatsoever. They're two distinct different companies. So I was sent back to prison. Now, what that actually means in Ireland is that nobody ever again will get out of prison on a habeas corpus. Because if you can't look behind the order, then whatever is going on, they can't see. And if there's mistakes on the front of the order, sure, we can just change them. So you can never get out of a habeas corpus. You could never get out of jail of a habeas corpus anymore in Ireland. That means if I murdered someone and I appealed it and I lost the appeal, and the guy I was supposed to have murdered went to Australia just to get away from everything, but he came back and he's sitting with me in the court and I'm doing a habeas corpus, I couldn't get out because they can't look behind the face of the order, and I've already appealed it and I'm not entitled to a second appeal, even though I could be saying in the court, here's the guy I was supposed to have killed.
That's outrageous. There are listeners saying to me, there are mutual friends of ours listening to this, they're saying they can't believe their ears. Ben Gilroy, yeah, standing independent for MEP for Dublin. Ben, yeah, you know all about Ben and the work he's been doing for many years. Work, I think, in many, many, many years to come, mate. Maybe long after we're gone, maybe I think you'll be recognised for...
Yeah, hopefully.
No, I think you will. I think you will. Before we talk about what... I mean, this is punishment, of course. It's punishment. It's a deterrent, right?
One last thing really
quick. Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
I think the reason the judge said I was in breach of a court order was because if he had referred to his right order, the correct order, this order was typed up somewhere way back when, that I was in breach of a court order. That never happened. We all know that it was because of an affidavit I put in. But if the order was correctly before the judge, he had also given me to the 10th of May to do the community service. In January, they put me in jail. I had 5 months to complete 80 hours, which was only 2 weeks.
They were determined to get you into prison, weren't they?
Yeah, it had nothing to do with right, wrong, and breach of an order. It had nothing to do with that. The benchers basically gave a message, Gilroy's going to jail. Do it any way you want, because even if he appeals or it comes back before us, we'll just rubbish it anyway. And that's what they've done. So unless people, you know, there was an old saying, when they came for the Jews, I didn't stand up. And when they came for someone else, I didn't stand up. And when they came for me, no one stood up. And I'm just warning people, this can happen to you folks. I'm not a criminal. I've never injured, stolen anything in my life, except maybe a bar of chocolate when I was a kid going to school or something, you know.
Yeah.
But in general, I'm not a criminal at all. And to think that I could end up with a young family and be in jail, in Mountjoy Prison.
Was it miserable? Was it rotten in there? I mean, I can't, look, it might sound like a stupid question. I visited somebody in prison many, many years ago. When I was at Waterford Local Radio, I went to Mountjoy. I went up to see the former governor, John Lonergan. And John was governor at the time.
Yes.
And I just felt horrible. I felt it was a horrible place. And John was lovely, a very compassionate man. I know you, I'm sure you know John Lonergan. What was it like, Ben?
It's a dirty old kip, I have to be honest. The food is disastrous. The first month that I was in there, I was locked up for roughly 23 and a half hours. It was disgraceful. Eventually, I wanted to be put up on the wings because I just wanted to be out of the cell a little bit, you know. And in fact, when I met with the ordinary criminals in the jail, they were fantastic. They're just victims of their geographical location in Dublin. They grew up in ghettos that were designed by the company. The government, which is a company.
Yeah.
They were set up by the government, and these people had no chance in life. But there was one thing I found very refreshing from these so-called criminals was their niceness to me. They took me under arm. If I was short of porridge or a cereal or milk or anything, they'd just come up to your cell and give it to you. And these guys had nothing. Now, I used to buy cigarettes and just share cigarettes, and I don't smoke, but I used to share cigarettes because I seen poor old lost souls in there with nobody visiting, nobody giving them money or anything, even for cigarettes. So I would buy in shares, and I think I got a lot of respect for that. And also that people in there very quickly found out who I was and what I did. And from that end, I was well protected in there. But what I did find very refreshing is that everybody in there admitted they were a criminal. Yet I've been dealing with judges, bankers, solicitors, vulture funds, and deceivers, as I call them, or receivers, as they're known in the newspapers. And every one of them is an absolute criminal. And they have done more thefts and more, and put more people in their graves than the Mountjoy collectively, probably in the history of Mountjoy. And that's really saying something.
You see, Ben, I know that Ben has helped people, and I know that he's tried to help people. He successfully helped people over the years. Other people, you know, because of the corruption of the system, it didn't go the way he wanted it to, and people have self-harmed, yep, and people have committed suicide. It's a very, yep, interesting point you're making here. I came to believe years ago, and I didn't want to accept it. And it was actually through speaking to you back in 2013. I had met along the way one or two people who had written books about finance. They were called conspiracy theorists. But then, but then a bloke like you comes along then with a family, you know, a guy that can't be dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. And I began to see that very powerful financial institutions were in the middle of the biggest land and property grab that the world had ever seen, fraudulently getting people into contracts and into terms that they could never meet in order, yep, that they could take all those properties. And then you talked about vulture funds, a term I didn't even know, you know, again, till, yeah, I met you, and I can't believe it. And of course, you're the only guy in our country's history, you're the first guy to take this on and to try and explain to people, this is how it is, this is what's going on. And hence you were sent into yeah, Mountjoy. And you know what, I'm going to say, tell me if I'm talking through my backside, as awful as it must have been spiritually to see the misery of those poor lost souls that you talked about there, I happen to think as well, and I'm not trying to be all Walt Disney about this, but that experience I think was important for you.
Yeah, I think it was an experience that I had to experience, because, yeah, when I seen these poor people, and okay, they're criminals, right? They accept they're criminals, but they're doing their time for us. There was very few white collar criminals in there. There was very few people from Fox Rock in there. These are just, as I say, victims of their geographical location. And, you know, when I seen the heartache of some of these people, and I see judges farting through silk with the monies they've robbed from people, yeah, you know, it really galls me. And of course, the problem they have is I'm an ordinary educated man that I don't believe in conspiracy theories or anything like that. I look into things, and if I find they're a bit out there, I leave it alone. But, you know, this is all documented stuff, and I'm very careful when I'm in court to make sure I get the DARS and stuff like that, so I can document and verify everything I'm saying. So that's the problem they have, because I keep exposing it. I see when in one of the newspapers they gave a list of people running in the Dublin MEP. And just to show you how we don't have a free press here, they referred to me as a tin hat wearer, you know, running in the election also. Oh, here's this tin hat nutter.
But they're prohibited from doing... Listen, I worked in radio in Ireland. You can't do that shit. You can't do that. That's,
I know,
outrageous.
This is what they do. I know, they're basically, you know, shooting you before you have a chance in running in the election. And sure, I remember I was on Vincent Brown one night, and it wasn't Vincent himself, but I was introduced. Now, you're going for election. You're putting your whole body and soul in it. And here's an also-ran. You know, this is how I was introduced. And notwithstanding, I came fourth in the election and beat Labour, who was sitting in government. So I gave them a real shock.
Fantastic. I remember it, yeah.
But that's how the main media want to control everything. I mean, I actually, just as I was, you were coming on, I got an email from RTE, and they said, to whom it concerns, on 22nd of May next, Claire Byrne Live, which is one of the big programmes with RTE, will be featuring a special programme about the Dublin constituency in the European elections, featuring a mix of live debate and video. It's our intention to include all of the candidates in the programme, some in the studio, some on video. The criteria for separating the candidates are attached as follows. And it says, in your case, we are intending to broadcast on the night the 1 minute video you did for RT purpose. So they're giving me a minute you know, to try and, while the same old shysters and gangsters that have ripped this country off will be on selling their wares to the Irish people, and the same old shite that they listened to for the last 10 years with them saying, I'll be a strong voice and I'll be a strong voice. You'd swear it was the X Factor these people are going for.
Yeah.
So I was actually in the midst of returning a thing back to RTE, and and I'll just see if I can find it here, because it's interesting. Wait, I'll just see if I go. Just me phone.
This is your retort, right?
Yeah. Now I was only. It's not finished, but it is similar to what I was going to say. It's hi, David. This is the same old shite from RTE. You'll have the same old chancers and their parties peddling the same old crap of "I'll be a strong voice." The people are sick of it. Is it any wonder, like, people like me call for others to boycott RTE and stop paying for a TV license? How can anybody new break into the corrupt system we've endured for the past 30 years if you only let the same old shysters back on to peddle their shite? So, and there's more to add to that. But this is politics in Ireland, you know. And their criteria is, of course, if you were a TD before, you know, one of the major parties, or if you did well in an MEP before. But how can you do well when they don't even put you on the programme? How do people get to know me unless they listen to the likes of your show?
It's outrageous, isn't it? See, this is the thing. I've said this to guests in the past.
Close shop. Like,
millions of people should hear this. This should be on RTE. Let them argue with you. Let them shout their points, but at least give you that time to explain it to people. But they can't, because their biggest fear is, and that's the collective media and financial institutions, their greatest fear is that people understand it. Didn't Henry Ford say, and I can only paraphrase it, I don't know the exact quote, but there would be a riot if people understood how the financial systems work in their countries. There would be a riot. It staggers me, Ben. It really
but
does.
But when I came forth in the by-election, RTE then had to have me on because that's their criteria. And when I came on, all they did was attack. And they had the same old flower pots sitting beside me, like White, who's running now in the European elections. And what's the other girl's name that's running? I can't think of her name now, but she was, Frances Fitzgerald.
Oh, Frances Fitzgerald, Fine Gael, right?
Yeah, Fine Gael. She's running. Now, this is the lady who was involved in the Maurice McCabe stitch-up, right? And most honest people, if you were caught stitching up an honest man like Maurice McCabe, because remember, he won his case, so we know he was stitched up, he was paid off by the state.
This is the Garda now. A lot of our listeners here won't.
Whistleblower. Okay, he was doing exactly what I'm doing, whistleblowing about everybody in the courts and the banking system. He was whistleblowing about judges and the guards and getting penalty points squashed and all of that. Frances Fitzgerald was the minister at the time of justice, and she was the one who stitched him up. While other Garda commissioners were embarrassed and resigned, she was forced to resign. Now, most people would go off and hide under a tree.
Embarrassment, yeah, of course.
And enjoy their pension with embarrassment. Instead, she has the neck to come out and stand for election again. And the trouble is, there's newspaper reports that I shared on my Facebook, she's expected to romp home. Now, what does that tell you about Ireland?
Well, it's cronyism. Because of the corruption and because of the things that, you know, that were maybe overlooked because of things that were brushed under the carpet. Here is your reward now, and it's not. Okay. I don't know anything about her, but often when ministers of state, whether it's in the UK, whether it's in Ireland, when they favour the big institutions over the little guy in the street, they later on get their reward. In England, they get a lovely cushy job in the House of Lords where they can fart and snore their way through the afternoons for £300 a day. And I'm sure it's the same in Ireland. You know, it's
of course it is. Yeah,
dreadful,
but not only that, like Frances Fitzgerald, you see, because we don't have a free press, they're already putting into the psyche of the public, she'll romp home. So a person down in the booth thinking, well I vote for Ben Gilroy. I read he was a tinfoil hat wearer, and also my votes will be wasted if he's not going to come anywhere. Sure, I may as well just go with Frances, and then I can tell her I voted for her when I'm looking for a shift up medical waiting list or whatever it might be. And this is politics in Ireland, but everything in Ireland is corrupt. Every department of The government is corrupt. The judiciary, like from the health system to the children's hospital fiasco of 1.2 billion when it was supposed to be 400 million. These are all just payoffs to people and nobody gives a shit. We've actually gone down the swamp so much now that unfortunately I think we need someone like Bush, or not Bush, he's part of the swamp, Trump to come over and clean the swamp here as well. And I know, you know, whatever people think about Trump, he should stay off Twitter. But in any event, you know, talk about a swamp of such a little country we have. And you may as well vote for them because we're absolutely destroyed as a nation. Either you know some crony who can win you a court case or get penalty points scraped or get you up a medical waiting list. Because if you don't know those, you're knackered screwed. In this country.
You're screwed.
And that's why you're better, you know.
We're just about out of time, right, for today. It's been a long time, mate, since you were on. I'm glad you came back
no
on.
Problem.
Sorry, everybody who knows you was disgusted at your treatment earlier this year because everybody who's known of you and known you knows what you've been doing. You've done it for other people. You've never done it for self-gain or self-promotion. You're an extraordinary man, Ben.
Of course.
And the world is better off for having you in it. And Ireland is, however bad things are in Ireland at the moment. I wish you success, whatever it is, in this campaign to be MEP. I really do.
Thanks, Richie.
No, I do, mate.
Yeah,
and,
well, as I say, yeah. I'm just wanting the office behind me. It's not for the wages or whatever. I want the office behind me so I can stand wherever and make sure that EU directives are being obeyed in the courts. I want to completely destroy secret societies like the Benchers. I wanted to make it illegal that the same as it is for our police force, the Gardaí, that it's illegal for them to be members of a secret society. I want the same legislation brought out for solicitors, judges and barristers with severe penalties for anybody in a secret society. Because as JFK said, secret societies and democracy are not compatible. And that's what's wrong with Ireland now.
Fantastic. It's repugnant, he said, didn't he? Secrecy is repugnant in an open society.
Yeah.
Listen, I mentioned her today. I don't do this for, you know, any other reason than I mean it. I'm really glad that Isabella is doing really well, your daughter, who had a difficult time for a couple of years ago. And she was unwell. She's thriving. You're going to thrive, mate. Keep doing it. No matter whether you win the MEP seat or not, keep speaking up for the little man.
Oh, I keep doing what I
do
anyway. It would just be more effective. Like, I'm quite effective as is, because they always have to come out and try to jail me or do something stupid. But with an MEP office, it would just make it more difficult and make me more effective.
People
want change. You know, all you have to do is give me one vote. That's it.
Go to Facebook. There's only one Ben Gilroy. Because Ben is so well known, if you put Ben Gilroy into Facebook, he comes up immediately. I'll get the link to his Facebook page and I'll tweet it out now. This conversation, of course, will be online in about 15 minutes time on Podomatic, iTunes and Spotify. It'll be on YouTube later on as well. Pleasure, mate. Pleasure knowing you. Great
Thanks,
to get back
G,
in touch
you
with
too,
you again.
Mate.
Anytime you want to come back on. Great to have you.
Thanks, Richie. Talk to you soon, mate. And all to your listeners, thanking you.
Cheers, Ben. The amazing Ben Gilroy. Folks, if you are in Dublin, you never voted in your life and you couldn't be arsed for good reason as well, get your polling card. Go along on May 23rd or whenever it is. It's May 23rd across Europe, I think. Ben, is it May 23rd?
I think it's 24th in Ireland.
I'm glad you didn't go there. It's
May
on the
24th.
Friday. So May 24th. Yeah. Cheers, mate. Thanks for that. The brilliant Ben Gilroy. May 24th, which is Friday in Dublin. Get out and put an X alongside his name. Great to have him back on the programme there. And also thanks to Michael Shrimpton, who was my guest in hour one of the programme. That's it for today. The programme has flown by. Massive thanks to Jean-Anne Crowley for co-producing The Richie Allen Show today. That's my great friend in Cleggan. Thanks for your help today, Jean-Anne. Really appreciate it. Until tomorrow.